I'm going to tell you a few cases of PSA. First case is not one of my patients. So I am telling you a story that was related to me by the actual family physician, who is a former teacher and mentor of mine and a good friend of mine, who, an amazing family physician, amazing. You're unlikely ever to hear anybody say anything bad about him. And he had a patient who was very much like our Mr. XY, you know, 50, healthy, all that stuff. And at the end of every visit, it was the whole topic of what tests do we do, what do we not do. And this patient had asked him, you know, do I need that PSA test? So what's the issue with PSA? Where do we stand? Why is it a controversial test?
There's a lot of factors at play. Patients can have sort of elevated PSAs but have no, you know, underlying prostate cancer. Uh-huh. Can be elevated in BPH, which a lot of patients have.
BPH, what else can elevate a PSA? Sorry?
Prostate cancer.
So BPH, prostate cancer, what else?
Prostatitis.
Ejaculation. Usually in context of BPH. Trauma. Okay. If somebody rides their bike every day and rode their bike to the hospital to get their PSA done, that can actually raise PSA. A DRE. You know, there we are, poking on the prostate. Ooh, I think I feel a nodule. Go do a PSA. You see? It's high. You know, yeah, absolutely. A lot of things will raise a PSA, not necessarily prostate cancer. That's part of the controversy. Yeah.
I think it's hard to assess the actual absolute value of PSA. It's often used to look at the trends.
So what is that called? PSA. PSA velocity. Okay, so you're absolutely right. You know, is an absolute number that important? I mean, maybe, but it's also important to see how quickly it's changed. Okay. What else is the controversy here? Let's say it is a prostate cancer. Where's the controversy there? Hallelujah, we found it, right?
Well, the controversy is sort of methods that you use afterwards, you know, where you start to resect or interp or, you know, various invasive procedures that end up finding cancer that wouldn't have ever been a metastatic or so small or low grade that it would have most likely just stayed there. And
so how common is prostate cancer?
Very.
So I remember this from medical school, and I think it's still true that they say at autopsy, 80% of 80-year-olds, right, have microscopic have evidence on autopsy of microscopic prostate cancer. What percentage of prostate cancers are aggressive? Depends on who you read. Guess? Hazard a guess. Less than 10%, 25%, 50% or 75%?
Less than
10%. So probably about 5% of prostate cancers are aggressive. Okay. So, what's the problem of finding the prostate cancer? You know what? Don't answer that. I'm going to tell you what that is in a minute. Anyway, so let's go back to my friend and his patient, right? Patient comes in. They have the discussion about the PSA. Patient says, you know what? Sounds like it's not the best screening test in the world, right? Don't do it. It's fine. So years go by, every year, he asks, every year, nope, don't want the PSA. So 1 year he comes in and says, my family's driving me nuts. Do the PSA. It's all over the Gazette. The Gazette is the most influential medical journal in Montreal. It's all over the Gazette. Please do a PSA. Does a PSA? PSA is high. Okay, what's the investigation of a high PSA? What do you do next?
DRE
and TURP. So you're going to do a DRE. First, you're going to repeat it. So DRE, not a TURP, but you're going to do a transrectal ultrasound.
Sorry.
Okay, with biopsy usually. Not nice things. Anyway, this gentleman goes through all that, he's got prostate cancer. Which is bad enough that he has prostate cancer, that's too bad. I mean, maybe or maybe not, this may never have caused any problem. But the worst thing to me in the story was that the family is infuriated. Refuses, says, you're never going back to that family doctor again. You know, doctor-patient relationship, gone. You know, that's part of our morbidity in this case. This guy's lost his family doctor who did a lot of good work with him over many years. That's not a good story. Nobody likes that story, right? Second story I'm going to give you is my patient. And I want to paint a little bit of a picture of this patient. My patient is now in his mid-70s. So we're going to go back about 5 or 6 years. He was in his late 60s at the time. It's a gentleman who suffered from coronary artery disease, fairly advanced, like he'd already had emergency bypass surgery, diabetes, hypertension, cholesterol. How often do we see that all together? Who was luckily very stable in his medical conditions, very, very implicated in his health, very, very good compliance, good lifestyle habits, and had stayed well for quite some time and lived a good life. Lots of travel all over the world, usually in a trailer, you know, really just somebody who was just out there, like really living life. And every time he came to see me, which would probably be maybe 3 times a year, he would ask me, he would bring in a spreadsheet that he had completed, and he would say, could you write down all the results of my blood tests? So some blood tests have to be done every 3 months, right? You know, he has diabetes, so we have to do that. Others don't, you know. But when I looked back in his chart, this gentleman constantly, every time he had come into the clinic, everybody was ordering every blood test on this guy. So what did I say is an important factor that influences us is what our colleagues are doing and our friends. I forgot to mention what the resident who used to follow this patient used to do, you know, because you don't know this yet. It's like your R1, it's your first day. What's the first thing you need to do? You know, the patient comes in, you go back to, well, what did the last resident do, you know? And anyway, one day he comes in to see me, and I'm writing all the results down in the column, and the last one was PSA. And his PSA was something like 3, which a normal total PSA is around what? Yeah, around 4-ish. But having recently attended a lecture on PSA velocity or something like that, I noticed that 6 months ago, why I had done his PSA twice in a year, I have no idea, his PSA was 1. So in 6 months, it had tripled. So I said, well, that doesn't sound very good. And we believe in the facts, right? We believe in the facts, and if there's a cancer that could be out there, we're going to look for it, right? And if we're going to look for it, we're going to treat it, because cancer is bad, right? It's all in there, right? That's what we're taught. That's what, you know, not just in medical school, but that's what we're taught in the world. You look for cancers, you treat them. So right away, I sent him to urology. Right away, urology jumps to biopsy. Right away, his biopsy, of course, is positive. This guy's got prostate cancer. Has his resection. Needs radiation. Okay, so this is a time in Quebec where it was all over the headlines that they were starting a new program whereby patients who needed radiation were being bused to Burlington, Vermont, to get their radiation. And then they would, you know, they would do that on a weekly basis. So Monday morning, they get in the bus like somewhere, they drive to Burlington, they stay there for a week. Radiation only takes about 20 minutes. So you go into the room, you get your radiation, you sit around all day long, you wait for the next day. Friday night, they ship you back. Monday, you go back again, because you usually do 3 weeks. You know, and that's what they were doing. So my patient says to me, I'm going to make this easy for the government. I'm going to take my trailer down. Take my trailer down, and I'm going to go in a trailer park, and I have my radiation. And he did his radiation. And at the end of his radiation, he would amuse himself by cheering up the other patients who were, you know, recently diagnosed with cancer and far away from their families, by taking them out for trips in the Vermont countryside on the back of his motorcycle. Now, this is the kind of guy we're talking about. I'm not just saying because he, you know, I admire him so much, which I do, but because all of this is important. Okay. So, finished the radiation, more urology follow-up. He's now cancer-free. Beautiful. Okay. A success of PSA, right? I'm awesome. I found that cancer. Got rid of it. So all of a sudden he starts coming in and he's saying, you know, things aren't going so well anymore. I'm bleeding when I have a bowel movement. I'm bleeding. And he's bleeding, and he's bleeding, and he's bleeding, and he's bleeding, and he's bleeding. What has he got? He's got radiation proctitis. And we're sending him to back to urology, and urology is sending him to GI, and GI is trying this enema, and this and that and the other thing. Nothing is working. And we finally find one obscure treatment that seems to be working a little bit, but it's hard to get. And he comes in on a Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm bleeding and I'm tired. And I'm not there. And one of my colleagues sent him for a CBC, and his hemoglobin is something ridiculous, like 80. Okay? Was he sick when I checked his PSA?
No.
No. Is he sick now?
Yeah.
He's sick now. He's very sick now. He's getting transfusions. He's at a different doctor almost every day. Is he traveling?
No.
He's not traveling. Is he living?
No.
He's not living. Okay? Did it take a month to resolve? It took years to resolve. Years before we were able to finally find the treatment that stopped it. Okay? Years out of his life. Now, this gentleman was in his late 60s, okay, with a significant burden of other illness, with a very low burden of tumor. Would this likely, this cancer, have caused morbidity or mortality? Probably not. Okay? Now, do I think we did the wrong thing by the, do I think that we did the wrong thing by this gentleman? Truthfully, no. Because he knew that this could happen. This was an informed decision on his part. You know, the actual testing, the actual, everything was an informed, he wanted all of this done. There's no question. So I'm not saying we did the wrong thing, because it is controversial. You can go ahead and do all of this, you can not do all of this. The only reason why I'm saying, telling you this story, is because keep in mind that this could happen. The most dangerous weapon that the family doctor, any doctor has, is the pen. Why is that? Because the pen ticks off the test, okay? And tests breed more tests. And tests are inherently flawed. And unless you understand all that, you could be making a lot of misery for a lot of people unless you do the right thing, you know? And you will never do always the right thing, but you have to keep in mind, more tests is not better. But in our mind, more tests are better, right? And if there's a cancer, you look for it. And if you find it, you treat it. And that's not always the case. Okay? Thank God, he's doing extremely well. Came to see me 2 weeks ago. He's doing awesome. He's traveling again. I don't think he's riding his motorcycle anymore. So it was a really bad blip in his life. But you could probably see situations where there's patients who don't know that PSA can lead to this and who just go along with it, you know, and who maybe wouldn't be so satisfied at the end of it all, right? Third case, last one I'll tell you, is also a patient of mine, although unfortunately I'm giving you the story secondhand because I was not directly involved. It was actually my students who told me this story. And this is the cohort which is a year older than you. So back 3 years ago when they were doing PA1, this patient became their first year patient. And this patient suffers from MS. And unfortunately, fairly advanced MS. His life is severely affected by it. He's no longer my patient for the simple reason he can't get out of his house to come and see me. So he has home care at home. Duh, as if he has home care somewhere else, but you know what I mean. He's on his second marriage. His wife he met at his MS support group, so she also has MS. So very highly developed, their house has been transformed really into a house that can meet their needs. They have full-time help, CLSC almost every day, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, he travels by motorized scooter because he can't walk. And he asked, called up my students one day and said, hey, I'm going to my urology appointment. Do you want to come with me? And they said, great, you know, awesome. You know, you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to go on their doctor's visits with them. So they go into the urology appointment. And the urologist says, oh, my goodness, this is awesome. I don't usually have, not an academic setting, I don't usually have students with me, so let me tell you the whole story. So this is a gentleman in his 50s who suffers from multiple sclerosis, referred to me for an elevated PSA, and we proceeded to transrectal ultrasound and biopsy, which confirms adenocarcinoma of the prostate, a Gleason score of whatever, treatment options at this point include, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's over there, right? And he sort of says, excuse me, but did you just say I have prostate cancer to them? Oh, yes, sorry. You do have prostate cancer with blah, 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 blah. That's just a little extra training thing, a little teaching thing, you know, don't ever do that, right? Don't ever do that. Not the point of our topic today, but I couldn't help it, couldn't resist. And try to imagine the scene in the waiting room afterwards, because he's waiting for his transport adapté to come and take him back home, and he's sitting there with them. And they're just like, what do you say? And finally, after an endless silence, he turns to them and says, just please don't tell my wife. It's not like I'm going to do anything about it. Wow. That's pretty powerful, eh? I mean, I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach when my students told me this. My patients were crying. My students were crying. They couldn't, you know, that's as powerful as it gets. And interestingly enough, this patient has referred me many, many, many other patients from the same MS support group. So even though I don't see him anymore, I often see his friends. And one of the friends came to see me maybe a month after that and said, did you hear about him? Like, on top of everything else that he has to deal with, now he's a cancer patient too. And I thought that was so incredible for that patient to say that to me. Because, I mean, how true is that? You know, on top of everything else, now in his mind, he's labeled a cancer patient as well. He's got cancer, the capital C. And it's a cancer which is probably unlikely to ever cause him any problem, probably can't tolerate any kind of treatment anyway, but now he's got to deal with this. And I can't help but wonder, did anybody at any point have a discussion with him, you know, as to why, about this test? But, you know, we all have the best of intentions. And when we tick off that test, we're not doing it for our own gratification, really. I mean, maybe we are at some level because it makes us feel better to think that we've done everything we can. But we're really doing it to try to make the patient better. But more tests are not necessarily better, you know. And sometimes a test can do more harm than good, right? You know, and he's, you know, what, 4 years later now? Doing well. You know, prostate cancer hasn't caused anything, you know. He struggles with his MS every day, but he's struggled with that for 30 years, 40 years. But emotionally, I think it probably took a big toll on him. Comments, questions? Now, I don't want to make you guys feel like I never order a PSA, okay? Like any of you, like I've worked with you already, Jeb, I'll be working with you. I order PSAs, but I no longer order PSAs indiscriminately. Everybody should get this. What's the level of evidence for a PSA? Why don't we go check that? Anybody hazard a guess?
C. Anyone else? What about DRE? Somebody mentioned DRE for Mr. XY for prostate cancer. DRE is a C. PSA is a D. This is a task force. You will find sources that recommend that you do it. Most recommendations, however, now that I have seen, will say
you can do it, but only after a discussion with your patients as to the implications of this test, right? And the rationale is what? While PSA can identify prostate cancer at an early stage, a false positive rates range from 67 to 93%. Mm-hmm. The effectiveness of therapy is unproven but carries significant risk of important adverse effects. Okay? So I'm one doctor that already has three cases of, you know, PSA gone bad. Sounds like a TV show, PSA gone bad, right?
The cutoff, like what? I met a patient yesterday who had a PSA or general physical for his work. He had to go every year, and they did a PSA and he gets it 19, and you know.
19.
19, yeah. Mm. I mean that's really, like.
I
and
can't.
Now 4 years later, they'll tell you here that it's a general stage four. But
yeah.
I guess like.
That's an aggressive PSA. That's an aggressive prostate. He's how old? Yeah, young guy.
Yeah.
I 100%, I know exactly what you're talking. I have also had cancers with patients with Gottfried. I've also had patients with aggressive. You know, it's counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. If there's a cancer out there and there's a test that could potentially detect it, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, maybe you don't.
But I think this is looking at like a population like,
right.
whole. It causes probably more harm than good.
Yeah.
But obviously, for certain patients, it'll be really good. For some patients, it'll be really bad.
Yeah. Is there any test that we do on women that maybe also has a bit of controversy about it? Sounds similar to this.
CA125.
Yeah. I'd say at least once or twice a month, one of my female patients will come and ask me for CA125. You know, and this is actually, I swear to you, a true story, okay? I'm driving to work one day. This is probably about 3 years ago. And there I am driving, listening to Shom, not even the news station. And somewhere wedged between, like, Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin, there's a commercial saying, "Women, do you suffer from unexplained bloating and weight gain? Call your doctor immediately. You may have blah, 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 ovarian cancer, demand a CA-125. I'm like, bloating and weight gain? Like, hello? That's just, like, every patient who's having their period is going to come in and ask me for CA-125. You know? So at least once or twice a month, my patients will come in asking for CA-125. I mean, and I have the discussion with them, and I tell them point blank, you know, yeah, you know, I'm not going to say no, I refuse. But you need to know that this test has an important false positive rate. But if it is positive, we're going to have to, you know, you're going to have that knowledge, and we're going to have to, at the very least, follow it, repeat it. And it might go as far as serial ultrasounds, gynecology, CTs, and it may be nothing, you know. So, yes, we may find something, but there's also a very good chance we will just cause many, many months of horrible anxiety for you, you know. So it's 50-50. About half of them will say, you know what, if you're telling me this is not a good screening test, forget it, I don't want it. And half will say, I've heard things like, you know, my best friend died of ovarian cancer, and I will not sleep unless I do this test. I mean, I call it rolling the dice. You know, sometimes that's what it is with screening tests. You order it, and then, you know, it comes back, and you're like, oh, please be normal. If it's normal, you're a champ. If it's abnormal, you wish you never ordered it. You know? Okay. Perfect. Anything else related to this? Any questions, comments? I'm going to talk to you about one last topic. One last topic, and then we'll spend some time just generally answering your questions about family medicine. Talk to you a little bit about, to say it loosely, private medicine in Quebec. So I think that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. So I will make it more specific, but I'm going to just preface it to give you a little bit of a setting that, you know, private medicine in different forms has always existed in Quebec. So, for example, you have physicians who actually offer private services, which when I say private services, physicians who do not get paid by the provincial medical board, by the RAMQ, They get paid directly by the patient. There are also private services that are offered. Okay, so private services being radiology services, so which are related to medicine but different. You know, and the way these things are treated legally in Quebec and is really very different. For example, if you have private insurance, so I don't know, you have La Capitale or whatever, you can use your private insurance to reimburse you for private medical acts such as an ultrasound or a blood test. You cannot, however, use your insurance to reimburse you for the fees of a physician. So you can't go and get a knee replacement at a private orthopedic hospital and then use your insurance to cover that. Okay. So there's various forms. I mean, it's I think it's an issue which is very, very blurred. And owing to legal decisions that have been made in the last few years, I think it will continue to be blurred, and we're very much in a state of flux right now, specifically in Canada, but probably soon in the rest of the country as well, as to where we stand with this. But I could tell you that from someone who... I mean, when I say I work in a private clinic, it's not a private clinic in the sense that my patients pay me for my services. It's a private clinic because it is not a CLSC or a hospital, right? It's a community clinic. That's probably the best way, a better way for me to describe it. But private medicine is a very big reality of what we do, probably more so in my practice there than my practice here, but a large percentage of my patients, very large percentage of my patients, will ask to go to a private lab to do their blood tests. For whatever reasons, we only have two areas in the West Island where you could go to get blood tests done, quote-unquote, publicly. The waits can be very variable. There's days where you're in and out in 10 minutes. There's days when you could be there 5 hours. You know, maybe not 5 hours, but close to. I've had patients swear that it took that long. So the demand is there. You know, and patients will tell me, you know, why should I go to the CLSC when I could go to the private lab, be in and out in 10 minutes... You know, I have to get to work, so it's actually, you know, it's good for my productivity and my insurance will cover it. It's hard to argue that point, right? At many levels. It's hard to argue that point. I mean, I personally believe in good quality health care for everybody, but we live in a society where it is perfectly legal to use these services, and I think... I'm not going to go into the debate as to whether or not there should be a two-tiered system, but what I want instead to show you is how this can be a problem for you as a family doctor in your private office. So I think the biggest issue is that, you know, what I tend to see is that a patient will come back from a private lab, you know, and do they come back with the things like the CBC and the sodium and the potassium? Is that what we get back from the private lab? Usually what happens when they go to a private lab, it's there are different health packages that are sold, okay? So for the same price or even cheaper than doing the tests, which I already mentioned, they can get something, I don't know, called like a cardio profile or an anemia profile or something where they will do all of those tests and other tests as well. And I think, again, it's intuitive for us that more tests are better, more tests is, aren't, whatever. So we go for that, or people go for that. And what happens when you order more tests? You get more abnormals, right? And you have to deal with that. How many times do I get a set of blood tests back where there's a urinalysis included in the package that comes back trace or, you know, moderate blood? You know, what do you do with that? You know, there's no literature that says that the standard general population, healthy population, needs to have screening urinalysis. So you end up with these uncomfortable conversations where you say, hi, it's Dr. Lala calling. So your blood tests are great, I'm really happy. The only thing is your urinalysis has trace blood on it. Well, no, I wasn't really worried about anything, you know, beforehand. It's just that, I didn't actually order it. It's just part of the package that, you know, you bought at the private lab. But, well, it's probably nothing. Well, what could it be? Well, yeah, I guess it could be a cancer, but it's highly unlikely, and I really wouldn't worry about it. You know? Is that going to happen? You know? No. So you have that trace blood, so that urinalysis now fosters another urinalysis and a urine culture and an ultrasound of the kidneys and the. All for a test that never should have been done to begin with. Right? The pen is mightier than the sword. I wish I could tell you that this happens now and then. It does not happen now and then. It happens all the time. So that is a risk. Okay? And I have nothing against the concept of private medicine. It's not what I'm saying necessarily. I'm not going to go there. Like, my own personal opinions are completely irrelevant if I believe it and if I don't believe it. The bottom line is, situate yourself in your community. And you got to understand that stuff like this is going to happen. You know, and the unfortunate thing is that often what happens is that these tests engender cost to the public system, right? Because you then have to order this ultrasound, whatever, which we're all paying for, you know. So it becomes extremely, extremely, complicated. This is all in the concept of screening. You know, I have often, if any of you have worked in a number of businesses before starting your medical life, you know, if you work for large corporations or even smaller ones now and then, you often are offered insurance by your employer, right, private medical insurance. And sometimes to get that insurance, you have to have a letter that you send to your family doctor attesting to your health, etc. But sometimes you actually have to have these health assessments by physicians who are hired by the insurance company. Now, is it the job of these physicians to assess health? Or is it the job of these physicians to assess insurability? It's insurability, right? So I had a patient walk into my practice of several years ago, and she said to me, she's coming in for a periodic health exam, and said, before you order me any tests, I had them. I said, well, what did you have? She said, trust me, I had them. I said, well, okay, what are you talking about here? And she goes and fumbles around in her bag and comes up with something which was much thicker than this, probably double this size, and says, see? And I open it up, and it says, executive health summary of such and such a patient done by, you know, this insurance company. And it had every test I had ever heard of in my life, including a lot of them, which I had never heard of, and to this day have not seen again. You know, like, I'm talking about every blood test. I'm talking about CT calcium score of the thorax, high sensitivity CRPs, which we all know is really important in a healthy 30-year-old woman, and flexibility scores, like, don't ask, don't know what that was, audiology, visual assessment, stress test, stress echo, like, this is a healthy 30-year-old woman, you know? And every, you know, and it happens, every year I get these letters in the mail from an insurance company. Dear Dr. Lala, your patient applied for life insurance or medical insurance for such and such a company. We proceeded to do some investigations. Please note the following abnormalities and deal act accordingly. And you just see, you know, oh my God, they have high uric acid. You know, like, what am I going to do now? It's frustrating.
That's not even you managing your patients, but like someone else managing your
Now it is. You know, maybe you're not. Are you? I mean, if you look at medical legally, you are medical legally responsible for the investigation of the test you order. So it's not really about that, right? It's about, you know, patients showing up. I mean, just recently, my senior administrative assistant came running up to me at my office, just furious, shaking, you know, about a patient in the walk-in that was sitting there waiting with an abnormal EKG, who had gotten this abnormal EKG through their executive health assessment and had gone back to that physician and said, well, what does that mean? And the physician refused to deal with it and said, listen, I'm just, you know, I ordered the test. We legally inform you that it's abnormal, but now you're on your own. So, I mean, my administrative secretary was saying, well, I don't think we should have to see this patient. And I said, this is a patient in our walk-in with an abnormal EKG. And the rest of it might be an irritation, but we can't change the system today. And this patient is anxious and frustrated and feels abandoned. And why don't we just deal with this abnormal EKG, you know, and fight the system tomorrow? Tough, eh? Don't be discouraged. It's not all bad. Any questions related to that?
Well, imagine in our practice as well, like with the increasing availability of technology and screening, that it's going to be even more of an issue or a presence as well. And I'm just thinking, like in 5 years, how many different screening tests will also be newly developed?
And with that, the corollary would be that more and more of this stuff is going to be available privately. Mm-hmm. I could show you 10 websites that allow you to go get your own PET scan. You know? You ever seen a result of a PET scan? That PET scan finds everything. I would not wish that on my worst enemy. You know, like everything. Like, I don't want to know. On a lighter note, one of my colleagues told me that he was in Florida recently and was driving in front of a radiology clinic that had, at the holiday season, that had a flashing sign saying, "For Christmas, offer your loved one the gift of peace of mind. Buy a gift certificate for total body MRI today."
Oh my God.
Like, again, forget about my family member. I wouldn't give that to my worst enemy, a total body MRI. Let me put you in a tiny little tube that looks like a coffin and find everything that's wrong with you. You know? Yeah, Merry Christmas. Enjoy it. So, you know, I mean, that's a funny thing, but, like, you know, sometimes extremes make us think about what's actually happening in our life, you know? Okay, so I'm going to call that to an end then, you know, and I think thank you for your comments. I think that's very good, and maybe now after we can take a little time just sort of informally answering your questions about family medicine or residency program or any of this stuff. Fair enough? We good? Awesome. Yeah, no, we're good.